The San Luis Coastal Board of Education. The board met in closed session to discuss a personnel action. Is there a consensus on the order of business? We're all good? All right, thank you. So next we have the approval of the minutes of the January 14th, 2020 meeting. Any corrections, comments, revisions? We're all good? Then if someone could please make a motion to accept those, I would appreciate it. Anyone?
Also,
you have a funny button. Oh, there it is.
Also move.
I'll second. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by the chair to approve the meetings of January 14th. And then, Ms. Dawson, I would note this evening that Mr. Unger is not present, so otherwise we are all here. And I would also let people know that back there is some coffee and cups and things like that, if anyone is interested in that. Next, we have our student representatives to the board, and we have three tonight. Yay! And it's good to see you, Greg.
Hey, guys. First, I would like to apologize for not coming to last meeting, because I thought it was here, but it was at Los Osos, so, yeah. But anyways,
well, welcome we've to had the club. A lot of we all do that. You're good.
All right, that's good to know. We've had a lot of stuff going on at Slo High. This week we have counselors appreciation. So each day of the week we're doing something to show that we care about our counselors and appreciate their work they do for us. But last week we had Rivals Week, which is just dress-up days, and we counted up spirit points for who had the best outfits, and we gave out prizes. But this was all leading up to our dance, Winter Formal, and we had Winter Formal on Saturday night, and it went well. But the week before that, we had our rally, our winter rally, and that was really fun. But yeah, we've been pretty busy at Slo High, but it's been really fun. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Morro Bay.
Hi. So at Morro Bay, we're also doing Spirit Weeks at the same time. Last week was Kindness Week, which was like it was a partnership with the Kindness Club that we have at our school. And it was kind of just like a celebration of like friendship in general. And we had like last Tuesday we set up tables in the quad and everybody like sat together and it was like encouraged, and we played music and we invited like the SPED classes to sit with us at lunch. And then on last Thursday, we let kids come into the quad to write, like, positive notes for their friends and their teachers, and then we passed them out during class the day after that. And then, like, every day there was, like, a little challenge. Like, one was, like, say hello to somebody that you've never said hello to before in the hallway, or, like, compliment somebody that you wouldn't normally compliment. And it went really well. A lot of people really liked it, and it was, like, good turnout every day. And then this week, we have a spike ball tournament. I don't know if everyone here is familiar with spike ball, but it's that game where you, like, hit the ball into the net and it bounces. And it's played in teams of two, and we have, like, a huge bracket. It's, like, the best tournament we have. I don't know why everybody likes spike ball so much. Like, today, we were watching spike ball, and it was, like, team spikers versus, like, team your worst nightmare. I don't know.
And this is on the heels of Kindness Week?
Yes. Oh. Yes. It's a balance.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yes, so that's part of it.
Yes, I'm good.
We also are coming up on Valentine's Day, and at Morro Bay we do sweeties. So for $2 you can buy a card and a little chocolate and send it to your friend or your significant other or a teacher. And our choir also goes around, and for I think it's like $5 they'll pull someone in the front of the class and sing like a little song to them.
They did it to me once. They sang Mr. Sandman. It was like 4 minutes long.
Yeah. And most of the time that just ends up being like friends being like, oh, I'm gonna embarrass you in front of the whole class, and it's really fun. It gets our whole school going. And then today we had signing for our athletes. So Joey Rudell signed with Idaho University today.
Oh, wow.
And then Jessa Maurer got signed with Long Beach, and Joey does track and Jessa does water polo. So that was really cool. KSBY came out and filmed it all.
Great.
And we 2 weeks ago we had our crew rally, and at Morro Bay we have different crews like Caspian, Caribbean, Aegean, all of the different seas, and it randomly selects all the students into the four different groups, and at the end of the year, whichever crew has the most points gets a trip to Magic Mountain. So kids are so into that. It's insane. So we had a whole rally around it, and we played different games. We played musical chairs. We had a dance battle, and Ms. Smith, our dance teacher and counselor, judged it. It was so fun. And I emceed it. It was very good.
Oh, great.
And that's all for Morro Bay.
It sounds like a lot.
We're really busy right now.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Well, thank you all for coming and letting us know what's going on at your schools. It really means a lot to us to be kept up to date by you. So we understand if you have things going on and need to leave. But as always, thank you very much for coming and staying as long as you wish. Thanks. All right. Mr. Mayfield.
Evening. Principal Darla Batistic and some amazing Teach students are here to share with us some program highlights from Teach Elementary.
Wow.
Good evening, board members. Thank you for inviting us tonight to the board meeting to highlight some of our programs. I wanted to share a little bit of a follow-up from last year's board presentation, so we have a treat for you tonight. I have with me tonight a fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Shauna Robson, and some of her former students from last year. These are current fifth grade students. And we have Henry Cody on the end. You can give him a wave. Henry Lindsay, Brendan Egan, right. Finley Pierce, Josue Saavedra, and Sanaya Jayakodi with us here tonight. And last year when we came, we shared our Blue Ribbon Award with you. And as part of that presentation, we told you a little bit about what we consider our most instrumental practice, which is our Innovation and Exploration Initiative, also known as IEI. And what we noticed from that presentation is that you had lots of questions about it, lots of things wondering what it was. So this year, we thought that we would bring an actual IEI project to life for you. So the students are here to present their IEI project that they did as fourth graders last year, and it is just at the forefront of their IEI projects they're getting ready to do this year in March. So they're starting to brainstorm. And with that, I introduce our fabulous fifth graders.
When a class starts their IEI project, we think about real-world problems and chooses one to solve. We decided how we can help kids manage their stress and anxiety in a school setting. So we decided to design a place that they could go to feel calm and relaxed.
We created a space on our playground called the Relaxation Sensation Station. Here's a commercial explaining why we needed this.
Thank you. If I don't do this well on SBAC, I won't get into advanced math. If I don't nail this front handspring, then I will lose the competition. If I don't make this penalty shot, then I'm going to lose the whole tournament. If I don't make this shot, we're not going to go to the championship.
So you may be asking how we got it. So how we got it is a Kapoli construction management class donated us a plain wooden shed for us to turn into our relaxation station. So we put in carpet, chairs, and a bookshelf with some books on it. Then we put in a Lego wall and a ladder shelf with some fidget toys on them. Also, we put in some lanterns and two sequin pillows and two giant stuffed animals for people to snuggle with.
We broke into teams to make other things for Relaxation Sensation Station. I made rain sticks out of cardboard tubes. There's nails in there that are hammered in into a pattern. I filled it with rice grains, sealed the top with tapes, and painted and redecorated with wallpaper.
We also made eye pillows with rice and essential oils to help kids close their eyes and relax during the guided meditations.
One of our fidgets is called an infinity cube. You can turn it many different ways. It's fun to see what different shapes you can make with it and helps your mind get off stressful things. It is also extremely mesmerizing.
We made a massage chair back. Here, as you can see, so you can strap it onto any chair you like with this. And so it has three motors that go to the shoulders, the right shoulder, the left shoulder, and the lower spine. We also put some memory foam here so it's more comfortable. Here's where the magic happens. Here are the batteries that power this. So the positive wire goes to the switches, which are in the front. And then the black wire, the negative, goes directly to the motors, the vibration motors. And then when you hit the switch, it starts vibrating and feels really nice. Can kind of hear it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can hear it.
We also had marketing teams that made the website, brochure, commercial, animoto, stop motion video, and the website that showed what that advertised what the relaxation station was all about.
We also created our own guided meditation so that kids could practice meditating during class. We used Screencastify to record it. I guided the meditation. Josue did the piano. And another classmate who couldn't make it today, He did the sound effects. We'd like for you to do the meditation with us.
One. Sit in a comfortable position. Close your eyes. Start focusing on your breathing. Notice your stomach expanding and shrinking in each breath. Think of the world as a canvas and all your problems as ink. Let the ink melt on the pages. Each time you inhale, think of all the blessings that you have. Each time you exhale, think of all the negative things and watch them dissolve each time you breathe out. Become aware of the sounds surrounding you. Notice a light lowering from the clouds. Become all aware of the light's warmth. This light comforts you. Notice that light dissolving all the tension. Soon, you find some stairs. You start heading down the stairs. Eventually, you reach the bottom of the stairs. You see your favorite place in the world. This spot you love. You know that you can come back here whenever you want. Now, start focusing on your breathing again. Inhale for 3 seconds, and exhale for 3 seconds as well. Inhale, I am calm. Exhale, I am safe. Inhale, I am fortunate. And exhale, I am happy. Inhale, I am relaxed. Exhale, I am safe. Inhale, it's a beautiful day. Exhale, I am peace. Slowly start opening your eyes. You are back at home.
I think we should do that during every meeting.
I'm glad we did that before I had to come up here. I'm feeling good now. This project inspired our school to begin our own mindfulness practices in our classroom. So as a school now, we are each doing mindfulness, all of us at different times of the day. I like to do it after lunch recess when the kids are kind of wound up. And we take a moment and we just reflect on our day and we do some deep breathing. I'm using the Headspace app right now. Some of you might be familiar with it. Some other teachers are using Mind Yeti. And we all have what's called a mindful jar. And this mindful jar shows a visual representation of our thoughts and feelings throughout the day. And then when we just take a moment to just relax and calm ourselves, we can relate the glitter settling to our bodies calming and relaxing as well. As a member of our instructional leadership team, I've led the staff this year on some PD and mindfulness, and we're all on board. The kids are enjoying it. We all do it a different way in every classroom. But I'm noticing the kids are more focused and more attentive throughout the day and ready to listen and participate. And it's good for me as well. I think teachers are enjoying it too. So thank you guys for listening to these kiddos. They worked hard on this, and I felt very passionate about this project, and I think these kids did too. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So,
So are there any questions? Oh, we're not done yet.
Sorry.
Thank you for letting us share our REI project with you. We have a gift for you to take home whenever you might be feeling stressed.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
You loan out the massage board.
So are there any questions from the board? Ms. Spring.
Well, I was incredibly impressed, and I feel so calm and relaxed. But I did want to ask, is there an age limit? I mean, can I come and avail myself of this anytime for a visit? It's just wanting to check that out. So truly fabulous. It seems it's a really life gift and a life skill for everyone. So thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Mr. Buckman.
I just wondered if I could borrow the board for the rest of the week.
It does fit on the back of any chair.
So did I see this last year when I was at the I was impressed then, and now to really see it in action, it's really wonderful. Thank you.
And I just want to say on behalf of the board, Mrs. Batistic and the Teach family, we want to say thank you. And this is simply a certificate of appreciation for the great work you do at Teach. Thank you.
I guess I have to stand on the stool to reach the microphone. That's concerning. I just wanted to say that our IEI showcase this year is at the end of March. It'll be a whole new group of projects as each class decides what they want to build, and then they build it. And as always, we invite all of you to be panelists at our IEI showcase. If that's interesting to you, just shoot us an email, and we'll make sure you're on the invite list. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks again for coming. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to come see us and let us know what you're doing.
Thank you.
My compliments to the accompanist.
Yes.
All right. At this time, we have public comment. This is the time if anyone is here to bring up to speak with the board about an item not on the agenda, or if it is on the agenda at a later time and you wish to speak to it now, you're welcome to do so. Speaker time is limited to 3 minutes. Ms. Dawson will keep track of the minutes. We do request that you fill out a speaker request form. They're on the back table back there. It's just helpful to us. Is there anyone at this time who would like to address the board? Which I just skipped over. Okay. And I'm not going to do that. Okay, so, and then I just went out of order for public input. I skipped over item 6.01, which is correspondence. We did receive a letter from Dr. Brescia, the County Superintendent of Education, with regard to our first interim. Is there any discussion on that, Ms. Rogers?
Thank you. In reading this letter from the county office, responding to what we reported on our first interim, this is the first time that I can recall that we've not received a sort of a standard response that says you're looking good for this year and 2 years out. There was actually some cautionary language having to do with our reserves and some deficit spending. So I wonder if, Mr. Pinkerton, would you be willing to speak to that letter from the county office?
Should I do that during my budget update? Is that all right?
Sure, that's
okay.
Fine.
Perfect.
Okay, thank you.
Does that satisfy you at this time? Okay. Then next, we move on to superintendent's updates. And first is business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
So a couple things. So to start with the letter, we, as the board knows, the board has longstanding kept a 10% reserve. As a basic aid school district in particular, it's important to have cash flow. We only receive our revenues twice a year. And so those reserves are critical for us, to make sure that we're meeting our financial obligations throughout the year. So this year in particular, I think the board also knows, when we did our budget adoption, we had a multi-year, kept that 10% in terms of long-standing where we were at. And then, unfortunately, we really don't find out about our final property tax base until November. So at that point, that rapid depreciation of Diablo Canyon, losing $2 million in terms of unitary tax. So overall, our projection was about a 3.5%, dropped down to 3.2%. So that then becomes the true reflection in first interim. So we have not made any reductions, done anything at this point to kind of, cure that ill in terms of that third year out. So we still have 11%, for this year, 10% next year. So it's that third year out where we would, if we kept our current spending and if our budget projection continues at that 3.5%, we would drop below the 10% level. And so what I will tell you is that county offices of education are under way more pressure now to be very explicit in their letters to boards about budget and revenues. There's actually new language coming out in the governor's budget where it's actually mandated that county offices really look at reserves and give those comments to boards, not just for qualified or negative budgets, but really they want every budget looked at by the county office and really looking at reserve levels. So it's more important than ever. So we will be, looking at our budget. Again, we have LCAP coming up, budget adoption. So we will be finding a way to cure that so that we, again, bring that 10% reserve back up. It's also important to know that, our budget has grown. So as our budget grows, that 10% reserve number gets higher. So to meet it, so when we go from $80 million to $100 million, our 10% reserve goes from $8 million to $10 million. So we actually have to keep more in reserves as we move forward. But it's a good practice for us to have and something that we should be focused on as we, enter into the next round of budget adoption as we move forward.
So when will we have our first opportunity to see a revised 10-year projection?
So we will have the new 10-year projection at second interim, which will be March. But again, we won't have made major changes at that point, right, in terms of budget reductions, personnel cuts or anything like that. So it'll be a budget adoption, which we should know more, too, in terms of, we're looking at kind of the governor's budget, how that pans out, what happens, right? So I went to Capital Advisors last week, heard their budget workshop. They're changing some things with special ed funding, which is a positive for us in terms of looking at a three-year average funding. So we should receive about $530,000 more in special ed funding based on that new allocation, which is what's good. I'm hopeful that the governor will, instead of doing a lot of these little one-time projects that he's put forward in January, that he'll face some pressure to pay down STIRS and PERS more, which is definitely something we heard at Capital Advisors Workshop, that probably throughout CSBA, that is really probably the most important thing for school districts throughout the state that they face in terms of ongoing costs. So those are some of the key things, and then we'll see what else happens. Kind of the key thing that came out of the governor's workshop was last year, the governor had $7 billion extra. So over the Prop 98 funding, in terms of what he was able to do and spend. And so all the school districts in the state of California benefited from that, some paid out STIRS and PERS, and which is retirement costs, along with other, one-time spending. We got some preschool, special education funding, some things like that, which were helpful. This year, the surplus is about $2 million. So there's not as much of this extra that the governor has to spend and put into programs. So it'll be interesting over the next few months to see how that kind of pans out, and we'll know more at May revise time, and it'll definitely be something that I'll be addressing with the board as we have our upcoming LCAP presentations, and we have our budget discussions as we build the next budget.
Okay. I assume that you had your eye on the ball with
oh, yeah.
this, but should we assume that we will be receiving a similar letter at second interim?
Potentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for the explanation.
Absolutely. And so those are kind of the big things in terms of the business capital advisors, like I said, in terms of kind of where we're at, and we'll see what happens with the governor and some of the ongoing fiscal circumstances. There's a lot of districts in the state of California that are going to have fiscal issues. As you probably have heard, there's a lot of districts that are having a tough time in negotiations, fact finding, as they move forward. So it's an interesting time.
Thank you. Next, we have our educational services update.
I'll keep my hand on my stress ball as we go through the process.
We all will as we listen to these reports.
I thought he was going to say as he listened to me. So I have a couple things I would love to tell you about. First of all, we have an important purchase order and that is in front of you this evening for our new student information system, which is Aries. I know we've mentioned a couple times. There was a very large group of people from a wide variety of stakeholders that reviewed different student information systems and came up with Aries as a new system that we felt like had a lot more capability. It was overwhelmingly had the highest score of all of them that were evaluated. So although this will not be a simple process, student information systems impact many, many areas. We are really excited about the capabilities and the opportunity to re-examine some systems and be able to, kind of improve some systems moving from PowerSchool to Aries. So excited about that. We have great progress going on with our multi-tiered system of support. I know we've talked to you in the past about looking for additional supports for our students, especially that struggle academically or socially, emotionally. Third grade teachers conducted a pilot of an assessment system, and now we're kind of weighing out the pros and cons of that one, and some other teachers asked to pilot a different one. So we're trying to take a look at what they can offer and see if there's a way to get more specific data and information in order to address some of those needs. So some good progress happening there, and looking forward to that, still moving forward. Also, a couple of professional developments that took place since we last met. One was related to Illuminate. We had some people attend an Illuminate and professional development. You'll remember that's our data management system. And principals and staff members were really continuing to always analyze how can they utilize data, watch student progress in order to better match student needs. So really good information gained at that, as well as an AVID professional development. So AVID is, you'll remember, an elective system, but can also offer professional development sessions for school-wide instruction. It has fabulous instructional strategies. So the really neat thing is AVID's mission really aligns with, one of your big board priorities, which is how do we close an opportunity gap and how do we ensure that socioeconomically disadvantaged students are achieving at our highest levels. So it was a great training, really good strategies to use and ways to influence not just the AVID elective, but school-wide instructional strategies. So lots of great things going on.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Rogers.
Mrs. McGrath, how will we evaluate if teachers are implementing AVID strategies in their respective classrooms, not specifically in the AVID elective?
Yeah, it's a good question. One is from principal observation, right? To be able to see how strategies are implemented, to be able to give feedback around those strategies, and to be able to see how effective those are. As with any strategy, sometimes it's hard to pinpoint, was it exactly that strategy that made a difference with that student achievement? But teachers are always looking for ways to work with their grade level teams and to get feedback to continue to improve strategies to see if it's working or not.
So were principals participating in this PD as well as teachers?
Exactly.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
And then I'm wondering, when will the ARI program be rolled out? What's the anticipated rollout of that?
Yeah, we're looking for a full implementation in August, so the upcoming. In the background, they've already started evaluating how to roll over data, where kind of the buckets are, so to speak, that data can land into, and starting to look at how to modify, how to make sure that that happens smoothly. You know, summer school sneaks up quickly, and so there's a lot of things that they are working on in the background to help that transition go smoothly.
And when will training occur?
Yeah, it's already kind of starting to occur for IS&T, and starting to look at it for their needs. And then staff will begin to receive training after. I wanted to wait, you know, haven't announced it to the full staff until this purchase order was approved and that kind of thing.
It.
And then we'll begin more messaging and more communication and next steps.
Great. Thank you. Yes. All right. Next, we have our Measure D update.
Yeah, so I had a great meeting with our Citizen Bond Oversight Committee today. So we reviewed all the budget information from last year's school year. We walked San Luis Obispo High School campus, saw the construction there, which was nice. Our chair, Mr. Sanfilippo, will be here at the next board meeting to kind of present the annual report to the board, right, and report out as we normally do. And then for the board, we have two big items next week, right? We have the grand opening of the Student Support Center at Morro Bay High School. That'll be on Wednesday at 8:30, and then we have the study session where we'll do an overall recap of the Measure D budget, kind of where we're at. I made, you know, last time I had reviewed some of the changes that we were looking at, and so we went ahead and made those budget changes, so you'll have an up-to-date projection in terms of budget. And then, of course, we're going to start our discussion about the LCAP.
Great. Thank you. All right, next we are moving into the discussion action portion of our agenda, and 8.01 is donor recognition request. Christine.
Good evening, board. Thanks for having me back. Last time I was here, we were looking back at 2019 and talking about what was accomplished in our first year. Thanks in large part to your board and all of the support that you've provided along this journey together. And now I'm really excited to be here tonight looking forward and talking about how we can build on some of that momentum from the first year and really begin engaging the community in our first major initiative, which is the iInnovate initiative. And one of the amazing things that really came to the surface last year was the importance of the partnership model between the foundation and the board. And it's something that I was fortunate enough to inherit when I came into this role as the executive director, but was part of the design for how your board set up the foundation to be integrated in this partnership model with the district. And we've really seen the benefit of that unique model play out over this year as we've worked hand in glove with district leadership to design this initiative. And it was in part inspired by what we began hearing from teachers and other staff or administrators through our innovation grants as we started off asking where they saw opportunities to have big impact for kids. And there was a very strong theme that came out of those proposals, which was teachers saw an opportunity to elevate the types of hands-on learning that you saw the TEACH students showcasing here tonight, but to do that across all of our school sites. And then that matched a passion that members of our board have who are parents or community members and are saying, we really think that this engaging project-based model actually matches what students will need to be able to do when we prepare them for the future of work. And so there's been a really nice synergy there. And we're pleased that we are underway with phase one, which is the planning phase, where we already have teams of grade-level teachers coming together to help flesh out what it's going to take to do this on a district-wide basis. The foundation is now turning our attention to how do we launch a major fundraising campaign to engage the community to resource this effort and to bring these hands-on learning opportunities equitably to all 10 of our elementary sites. It's not a small undertaking to do this, but we think it's worthwhile because the kiddos, they're worth it. So as we have been talking through as a foundation, this fundraising strategy, one of the considerations is how do we recognize donors who join us in this effort. And so after much discussion, the foundation's recommendation was that we recognize donors on donor plaques that would be inside the innovation lab on an interior wall at all 10 of the elementary sites. The approach is that all of these plaques would be standard, as opposed to allowing donors to sponsor at specific school sites and therefore having different names at different sites. There was some concern about that approach, and so the recommendation was instead to really elevate the fact that this is a district-wide initiative, not about specific sites and attaching donors to specific sites, but engaging the community on behalf of all kids in the district. And as such, again, the recommendation from our team to me was to pursue a strategy that was a standard recognition across all sites. And so I'm here tonight to ask your board's approval to move forward with recognizing donors to the iInnovate initiative with a standard donor recognition plaque that would be inside the classroom on an interior wall at all 10 of our elementary sites.
Thank you. Any questions or discussion by the board? Mr. Millar.
So do we know who these donors are yet? Have they made donations?
No, we don't. So this is something that we want to figure out before we engage donors, because it's very typical that a donor would ask, and we've had this before, would ask at the time of the approach, what is the recognition if I come in at a certain level?
Well, I'm having a New Testament passage flash through my head about charity without, you know. I mean, I have to say, to approve this ahead of everything, and I have always had a little queasiness about plaques and things like that, so I kind of would like to see some more information and get a better sense of how important having your name on a plaque in an elementary school is to whether or not a donor will give money to help kids.
Anything else?
Yes, please.
Oh, Mr. Buckman.
I tend to agree with Walter, but if we continue down this avenue with individual plaques, we've seen within this community the Spanos Athletic Facility have to take down their plaque. I worked in a school district where we were about to name a facility after someone, and it turned out that they were also under investigation for being a pedophile. So if we were to move down this path, which I'm what kind of review process do you I mean, at least we could have some kind of process maybe before. Would they be fingerprinted? Would we look at tax records? I don't know. I mean, it's a little dicey to put someone's name on a building or a room or a hallway.
Yeah, so we are, just to make sure that I'm being clear, we are not proposing to name a building, to name a classroom, to name a facility, to name a hall. That was taken off the table right out of the gate with our board. And you know, this is a donor recognition plaque, not naming of a space. And so we've had a number of conversations about this question of how do we make sure that we protect the reputation of the district or the institution in the unfortunate event that something were to happen with an individual whose name was included on the plaque. And I will turn it over to Kim to respond to that.
Yes, I'll just bring up two points. Ms. Dawson, if you don't mind clicking on that board policy. So we have kind of wrestled with exactly some of the points that you're making, and I will bring up two things. One is our current board policy. If you'll scroll down just a little bit, keep going a little bit further. Your current policy does state a little bit further. appreciation. The board may show appreciation for any donation to the district in a manner it deems appropriate. So that's what Ms. Robertson's asking for you today, to deem that appropriate. And such appreciation may take the form of letters, resolutions, plaques, commendations, or awards. I will note that sometimes people are interested in putting a name of someone that they would like to honor. It's not necessarily their own name sometimes. And in order to address the concerns that I've heard here, I have the suggestion of adding that to the AR. So I know typically I wouldn't bring an AR for your approval, but what I would suggest that we'll review in the AR process would be an addition to our AR that says all gifts, grants, and bequests shall become school district property if at any time circumstances change substantially so that the continued display of any donor's name may compromise public trust, including acts of moral turpitude, the school district may remove the name. So just wanted you to know that had been discussed and I think is a reasonable solution.
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact that that deals with posting a plaque. I'm not sure what the difference. And my question is, what do we do in the pre-posting, the pre-use of a name?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some kind of review process that we could add, or do we want, maybe the board doesn't want, but is there something in mind for at least reviewing it before?
Mm-hmm. Right now our process is we have a development committee that sits and develops the list of names of individuals based on networks, who we know in the community that we think would be really excited about this type of opportunity. And so this is relationship-based fundraising where the names are brought forward to the committee and talked through, and there's a strategy that's developed for who's the right person to sit down and talk with that individual, et cetera. And so these are, right now we don't have as part of the fundraising strategy an outreach that would have people mailing in checks. It's more of an individual outreach based on known sort of relationships.
Mr. Millar?
One solution may be just to put up a plaque that makes a generic reference to people who donated to the Innovate program without identifying individual donors. So.
Mr. Buckman?
Again, I'm going to ask the question. Maybe I'll try and reword it. I appreciate a network, and I appreciate we feel like we know the people and that we know. And I'll just go back to the example. In a school district where I worked, we were about to name a building. I don't just go with the naming for a second. I don't see the difference between a plaque and a naming. And just before the board meeting, we found out that the person was under investigation for being a pedophile. I appreciate that we all feel good with each other in our community, that there's a network, that there's going to be an interview process. But, for example, we fingerprint our staff. We fingerprint coaches in the community just to weed out any potential. So, again, I'm just wondering whether there should be a process before we go to the, I don't know what to call it, I mean, hanging a plaque outside a classroom that we don't have to come back at the next board meeting and rescind it. So I'm just not sure if I'm feeling resistance, and maybe it's just I'm not expressing myself well. We're going to have an AR that says we can do something after the fact. I'm just asking whether it would make sense to have something before the fact as well.
So just so I could seek some clarity, Mr. Buckman, are you suggesting something occur before taking someone's money, but then we take their money, but we won't put their name?
Exactly.
Oh, well, that would be problematic for me, just as one person here, to say we'll take your money, but we're not really fond of who you may be, so you don't get your name on the plaque.
Okay, so if some, maybe I can give an example. Someone has committed a felony.
But that's, it doesn't, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand that whole piece,
clearly. Just if I can finish.
But my question is that it sounds as though we would accept the funds but not provide recognition.
Right. So what, if I can respond, so what I'm saying is, and what I'm, I think that there are people that would have a good heart and be willing to donate money, mm-hmm. though there may be something in their background. So maybe, I mean, what, from what I hear you saying is that I think people would give money even though they might have something in their background that they were ashamed of or that they didn't want to become public. So I'm not sure, again, and I think it may take a much different board meeting where there's more time and maybe some more research by staff. I'm not sure why we wouldn't just do some research ahead of time. And I'm not sure that that person would say, oh, well, gosh, I won't give the money. I don't think that they want to be embarrassed or they don't want to embarrass the school.
Well, I think I would say I'm not going to give money.
Well,
someone's
okay.
going to do a background search on me.
That's okay.
But, you know, that's...
It's just a concept.
Okay. Dr.
Eisenjust-Rogers. And I appreciate that you have a personal opinion.
Dr. Eisenjust-Rogers.
I feel like we've buried the lead here. I think what we're here to do is to celebrate the opportunity that we have before us to create these innovation labs in all 10 of our elementary schools.
Thank you.
We have a dedicated group of individuals who are well known in our community who are volunteering their time and donating their money to help our children. So I feel like changing the focus back to our children and talking about the program that is in front of us. Kim has already done the research on the language that is appropriate for us to consider, and that's something I think we should consider in a future board meeting.
So you're requesting that we table this?
It's an action item,
so I just need to be, it's a discussion action item on the agenda. So mm-hmm. are you suggesting that we not take action this evening?
I'm actually just speaking to Mr. Buckman at the moment, I guess.
Oh, I'm
but,
okay.
I feel like your concerns are concerns that we could address as a board, but the topic that we're discussing here tonight is donating this innovative space for our schools. I'd like to sort of separate the issues between what we're trying to create and what will satisfy your needs.
But the topic is actually donor recognition.
And the donor recognition opportunity that was presented to us was putting a plaque in the actual rooms where the donations have been made and where the students are benefiting from that. The plaque would have individual names that could be removed if there was some unfortunate thing that happened in the future or that's delved up from the past, their name would be removed from the plaque. It's that simple.
Well, I understand, but I think they do kind of go together in this discussion that we're having, I guess. I mean, that's my...
I'm sorry. Okay, so if they do go together, the solution's been presented is that there's a plaque in these rooms and that the names are removed if there is something,
yes.
unfortunately, that's discovered about someone before, during, or after they've donated money.
Right.
So,
but what Mark's saying is he's suggesting preemptive research.
And I'm negative on that because I feel as though we are among a population of people who are creating these opportunities for our students that we feel confident in going forward to that stage. That would be my position.
If I could add one other piece that's just already currently within our AR, does state that to be acceptable, a gift will be examined with respect to the following criteria to be ethically, aesthetically, and educationally acceptable to the district. That might give you a little bit of a balance, along with the addition that I hope to bring forward to the processes if any time circumstances change.
So the issue before us this evening, I'm going to just read the recommended action so that we're all clear. Approve the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation's request to recognize donors to the iInnovate initiative on a plaque to be placed inside each innovation lab at the district's 10 elementary sites. So that's the issue before us, Mr. Millar, then Mr. Buckman, and Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Could you clarify? I mean, clearly the donations are not going to provide the space for these. That's going to be district property, right? So what are the donors contributing toward for these innovative spaces?
Yeah. So what we're raising money for is to outfit innovation labs at each of our elementary sites. So I've been around all 10 elementaries, and a few of our sites have some type of innovation lab in place, but they are of, those that do have them, are of sort of varying levels of kind of resourcing. So some have, you know, some consumables, others have maybe a 3D printer, but there's no uniformity across the sites. And we have a number of sites where there's huge interest in having a fully outfitted space, but they just don't have the resources to do so. So what individuals would be donating toward is from, you know, something as simple as, you know, putting movable tables in there and paying for tables that roll out of the way so that you could do projects on the floor, you know, putting in equipment like 3D printers, adding storage so that as we bring in new resources or equipment, consumables, things that kids can do projects with, that we would have storage to support that. And then filling these spaces with all of those project-based learning materials that teachers are identifying that they want.
Can I say recognition?
Ellen?
Yeah, I have Mr. Buckman and then Dr. Eisendrath. Oh, Catherine removed her. Yeah.
Can I just say something quick, Mark?
Sure.
Walter, I think what they're calling these innovate spaces, you might be confused. I think it's what we had been referring to as maker spaces.
I think that's
if
right.
If that helps. I mean, just to visualize, because you've been in maker spaces, so.
No, I was just trying to get a sense of, I mean, it seems to me maybe the number one name on the plaque ought to be San Luis Coastal Taxpayers. You know, I appreciate people's willingness to donate. I'm just trying to get a sense of the proportionality of it. And I'm less concerned about listing criminals, frankly. And I don't know that background checks will be very productive in the donation realm. I just think we need to really think through how important this is to the potential donor. And maybe we ought to ask potential donors, do you really care that your name is in a room and a building in one of our elementary schools? And if they don't, you know, or again, the generic reference to what these donors did, you know.
Okay, Mr. Buckman, then Ms. Frang, then Dr. Prater. Do you want to interject now, Dr. Prater? Do you have, I mean, it's up to
I just would like to say with full discretion, without giving away, we have asked and we're looking at some pretty significant donors who have expressed interest in that, which is why we're here before those other meetings occur. So the timing of this is part of that. And that's all. That's all. That's what we're trying to do is navigate that, being respectful of board policy and something that we know is kind of a sticky issue. But with our foundation being a new entity in our experience, with sizable resources coming its way, we're trying to delicately navigate what truly is a San Luis Coastal property and practice into generating additional resources that we wouldn't otherwise have. So that's really what this is about tonight, to try to set that in motion so Christine can be successful as she nurtures these donors.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman? Oh, Ms. Frame?
Oh, I just had a question regarding the plaque with the donor names are kind of the initial donors. What it, I'm imagining that if, you know, these will be kind of ongoing, needing to be upgraded. So then, do we have another plaque with the second round of donors? I mean, I'm just, you know, thinking ahead as we, you know, move forward and, you know, trying to set precedent.
Yeah. So in my experience, I'll take the Children's Museum as an example. There's a large donor plaque on the wall of the Children's Museum that recognizes the founding donors. They still engage in ongoing fundraising to deal with the types of needs that you identified, and ongoing donors are not listed on their donor plaque. And so I'm imagining that absent some other sort of compelling need to add a name, in which case I would not recommend adding another plaque. I would recommend updating the current plaque. I'm imagining that what we're doing in this case is recognizing the founding donors that are launching this initiative and bringing these spaces online for all 10 elementary sites.
Answer your question, Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. You made mention earlier, and it was just sort of in passing, of recognition that might someone might want their recognition to be a remembrance. Mm. And I don't have any objection to that, but I wonder if the board heard that there might be a, you know, one Jim and Mary Jones in memory of Lois Jones or something like that.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Just on a different note, it was mentioned that the research had been done, so the National School Foundation Association has been consulted on what the sort of trend is across the United States.
We discussed this when we had our consultant and looked at gift patterns and what other... how other boards handled it.
And I'm sorry, and I don't remember. I apologize because it's my memory, but I don't remember. Was the consultant from the National School Board?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
All right. At this time, since this is an action item, I would seek a motion.
I'll move approval of item 8.01, donor recognition request, iInnovate initiative.
I'll second.
A motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, so we have Mr. Millar and Mr. Buckman opposed, and the rest in favor. So the motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Item 8.02 is approve increases to adult school salary schedule.
This is a continuation of the conversation from last month, and we are now including the adult school in the conversation to bring the salaries up to the minimum wage and then one right above the minimum wage.
Okay. Any discussion? Questions? We need a motion, please.
I'll move approval of item 8.02. Approve increases to adult school salary schedule.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
None. Thank you. All right. Board priority one. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. I am happy to present. This is an annual presentation we give that gives an update from an outside data source. So it's National Clearinghouse, actually. We contract with them to give us this information. So different than other data sources that I bring to you, we don't have a lot of flexibility on the groupings that we look at, the student groups that we look at, et cetera. It's however National Clearinghouse looks at it. They give it to us. So just wanted to throw that out there. And we tend to look at this college and graduation information annually. Really fascinating, but a little bit complicated data. I have to study this one before I present this one to you. So thanks for following along. Do I have the click? Oh, I do, don't I? There we go. Thank you. Okay, so the student tracker is what this is known as, and it looks at these questions. How many of our high school graduates enroll in college? Do they persist and actually graduate from college? How long does it take them to get their degrees? Do they go to 2 or 4 year schools, and which colleges do they most commonly attend? So we do have a few years of data now. So we'll start with college enrollments. So let's start here on this first graph. So this is interesting. This is our percentage of students
that are enrolled in college after high school graduation. So you can look at the orange line is the fall right after high school graduation. So notice that we've been in the 70s and ending there at 78%. You'll notice that the purple one shows that they've enrolled within 2 years. Okay, so overall, long-term, a little bit of improvement, but somewhat steady, right? Yes.
Do you know what the kind of the state or national average is?
I don't know for this one. Yeah, I don't know for this one. I could look to see if I can get to it. Not sure if I can. Like I said, I'm kind of limited on this because it's what they send to us.
Yeah, and I meant to just look that up, you know, elsewhere, but forgot.
Yeah, I know in general our rates will outperform state nationally for sure, but I could look more specifically. So this next graph here looks at, if you're thinking about the fall immediately after their high school graduation, this looks at the percent of students enrolled in college during that first fall. And it says, did they enroll in a two-year or a four-year? So I'll give you one guess there where the Cuesta Promise started taking place and having an impact. Can you see where those data lines begin to switch, right? So it started with four-year being at 39% and two-year being at 27%. And then notice when they switch, right? So that is a direct impact of Cuesta Promise Grant and 2 years of free college beginning there. So now where we see higher percentage going to two-year colleges, overwhelmingly Cuesta for us. There are, in a future slide, you'll see other two-year colleges as well with some attendance, but definitely Cuesta overwhelmingly. So you can see the combination there, 44% and 34% being 78%, which is what you saw in the previous slide. Yes.
I was just going to say that I very quickly looked up in Ed Policy in California that 26% of high school students enroll in four-year and 37 in two-year
there
in California.
Go.
And that's from 2018.
Nice, quick research there. So definitely our percentage is much higher. Great. So let's look at the next one. Next one says, what is our enrollment in a two-year versus a four-year within 2 years of high school graduation? So not immediately after, but within 2 years. You can see kind of a similar pattern. It's interesting that first year in 2012 started flip-flop, but basically the pattern of it was four-year as a higher percentage rate. And then when Cuesta Promise took place, you can see those percentages change, where now we have 44% and 38%. The next one is really interesting as you look for enrollment by student group. So the colors change per grade level, I mean per year, right? So you see 2016, 17, 18, and 19. So if you start with all, if you start with the color on the bottom, you'll see in 2016 where we started at 76%. And then over time, it has improved just slightly so that currently we're at 78%. Then if you look at NSED, not socioeconomically disadvantaged, you see 79% has gone all the way up to 86%. However, socioeconomically disadvantaged from 70% to 63%. The next one is a tricky group because you'll notice there English language learners, there's only 21 in that current group. So a little tricky to draw big conclusions over small group numbers, but still interesting to look at that 39%, 44%, and you can see the kind of outlier year there that was at 15% and now at 52%. With students with disabilities, again, 57, so you want to be a little cautious of drawing large conclusions. But you see the percentage has stayed similar, 49 and ending at 47%. The next one is really a similar graph. It's just saying within 2 years of graduation. So some students may take a gap year or, you know, walk away, try something else, and then, so this one's showing within 2 years of graduation. And you can see there how the percentages fall. Mr. Millard, you have a question?
I'm struck by the similarity in the two graphs, mm-hmm. this one and the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of belies the idea that if we don't get a student enrolled right after graduation, that there's going to be a meaningful decline in students who will follow through to college. Is that fair? Or?
Yeah, the way I look at it is if it's within 2 years of graduation, that would include the students that enrolled immediately after graduation.
Okay.
So
point.
I think that's why you'll see some similarity there, because it's a grouping of both.
Okay. It's a little less illuminating than
I see. Okay, let's look at our next one. So this graph shows colleges that are most attended. So we have data now from 2012 all the way to 2019. So when you're looking at all of those classes, right, so all of the graduating classes from 2012 all the way to 2019, you can see that the highest number by far, right, almost five times what the next enrollment, is that Cuesta College is the rank number one, right, the most students with 1,506 students, and that's 47%. The next one, you can see Cal Poly being the first four-year. Notice that they're all public with 354 students, which means 11% of our population. And then you can see the next ones, some excellent UC schools, San Diego State, Sonoma State, UCLA, and then the other Santa Barbara City College being the other two-year. Interesting. So next we'll follow graduation rates, okay? This is where it really gets interesting, more colors. So this is the one I have to study a little bit. So what you want to look at, and what helps me when I'm looking at this, is if you start at 2012-13, so notice that the green color is new to college, and the purple color at the top means that they're not within their data system. NSC is the National Student Clearinghouse, so they don't have a way to, they haven't found that student. So what I'm guessing is they're traveling, they could be working, right? They could, there's all, you know, all sorts of the other things. It doesn't necessarily mean it's not successful, right? That's one of the things we have to be cautious about. It could be that the student found their passion, started into work, and is being productive, right? So it just means that they're not within their database. If you look at the next year, that's where it starts to get interesting. So what I'd like to do is follow the pattern. That's what made sense to me. So if you look at the kind of, what would you call that, violet kind of a color, you've got that dark red, that is the percentage of students that have graduated. So notice that, of course, it starts really small. They would need a two-year degree there to finish there. And then all the way over to 18-19, this was the class of 2012, right? So that means within six cohort of kids, exactly, that 48% of them there in that darker red or kind of violet color have then graduated. If you follow me in that 18-19 path, you can see that the going up a little, the green, means they were new to college. So, you know, only a few said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and get it started now. Then the next one is the orange group, that they've persisted. I like how they worded it in the positive, yeah? And then the next one is blue. They've returned after stopping. So that's kind of the student going in and out, right? They started, they may have left to try something else. They're back in, still returning. The yellow group next, no longer enrolled, and they didn't graduate. Again, hard to know if that's a good sign or not, right? Bill Gates would be in the yellow group, right? But so would a student that didn't find their love and might be still floundering, right? So kind of hard to draw great conclusions, but the data says they're no longer enrolled and they didn't graduate. The last one being the darker purple at the top is, again, the students that were not in the database at all. So you can see that students keep showing up as that line gets smaller and smaller.
clear as mud, as my grandmother would say.
Ms. Frank.
I wanted to ask, you know, on this persisted, I'm just curious, does that mean they're just...
They're still taking a couple classes.
Racking up
their
debt. Okay.
Racking up those credits. How's that?
Mr. Millar would like to still be in the orange category there. Persisting. I like how they word it positive. They're persisting. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the next one. 2013. So the 2013 data shows some similarities, right? So you have 1 year less, right? This is the next class. It shows that a similar percentage there either were new to college or they're not in their system. And then if you follow the pattern all the way to the right, you can see kind of a similar pattern that you have graduated about 45%. The previous class as of that long was at 46%, so similar percentage. Then you have new to college. You still have a group persisting, about 10-ish percent. You have about 4% that have returned after a stop, and our previous slide showed about 3%. You have the next group, 22%, that's no longer enrolled, not graduated, and that rate actually went down from the previous slide, and then some that cannot be found in their data system. Okay, so if we look at what does that tell us by the graduation rates, so within 6 years, if you're looking at all of the students, you're saying that within 6 years, in the 2012 group had 47%, and the 2013 group had 45% within those 6 years. So similar scores is what you'll find for each of these areas, really. Is for looking at those two classes, not socioeconomically disadvantaged, had 57% and 53% graduate. However, socioeconomically disadvantaged, only 22 and 21%. If you were EL, the percentage went from 8 to 15. Again, that's, you know, not a huge student number there, 40 students. And students with disabilities stated a similar percentage. So let's look at conclusions, right? Kind of conclusions and next steps. So what we see is that there's a focus on college and career readiness for us, right? The keyword and. So this only looks at graduation and college rates, right? And we want to keep our focus on college and career. College enrollments did increase, right? So if you're kind of looking at the percentage of students, 70 to 78% over time, those percentages have increased. And of course, Cuesta Promise had an impact on if they weren't students were enrolling in a 2-year or a 4-year. Around 82% of all students enroll, right? Enroll in something at some point. Not socioeconomically disadvantaged students enroll and graduate at a much higher rate than socioeconomically disadvantaged students. Cuesta College being our most common, and Cal Poly being our most common 4-year. So thinking, yes, please.
Just a quick question. Cal Poly, I know that it's very difficult to get into, mm-hmm. and so I'm surprised that it's our most common school that our kids go to. Do they give preference to students?
Yeah, I don't think so.
County schools in the county or in our district? There's no
coming
preference?
Out of Cuesta, I think, as a transfer student, a lot of our students find that there's some preference there, and I think students find that they get kind of 2 years under their belt for free, that junior transfer.
But coming straight out of high school,
freshman,
there's no preference. Okay, thanks.
And when we think about that opportunity gap, is the same kind of opportunity gap that we see in other of our data points, right? In some of the work that we are doing as a priority, is your number one priority, and also I would say the foundation. It's really neat to see that they have an equity focus as well.
Mr. Buckman,
any questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks, Ellen. So I am so excited about the SED stuff, I can't tell you. And I really want to just thank staff and everybody, custodian, everybody that's involved. When I look at slide 7, and I look at the non-SEDs.
Can you let me know which one is 7? Mandy, do you have that? Which one, Mr. Buck?
7.
7.
I just don't have a number there, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the enrollment by student group, fall immediately after high school graduation. Yeah, the first. Yeah, thanks. And now putting on another hat, I looked at the non-SED, and there's a distinct decline among those students for enrollment. And I'm thinking the economy's good. All the things, all the stars are aligned for to go the other way. So
yeah, and
is there,
I think
do you
I
think
read
there's
it,
a trend?
Yeah, I think I read it opposite. So if you look at 2016 is at the bottom. So for not so economically disadvantaged.
I'm sorry.
Is it,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thanks.
Right,
but
yeah.
You know what, Mark? I have to say to you, I looked at this and thought to myself, darn it, you know, we're going backwards with a group we're focusing on so much. But then I thought, well, we have record low unemployment. So what's likely happening are the kids who need to get to work are getting jobs, and they need that economic foundation, whereas those with an economic foundation already are just going to college. And so that's why I think it's a double-edged sword.
Right. And I apologize. In my notes, it was the SED students, and I really wanted to praise on the benefit. And so then I...
Yeah, good point.
Wrong set of
yeah,
data.
Good point.
Thanks.
Great. Any other questions or comments?
One question is just—it's actually just a curiosity. It appears that, like, 1 year from next, one will have graduating class will have a more persistent class. It seems like more students have graduated that year. Did you see any patterns like that emerging? Like, is that a typical, like, surge and then? The withdrawal, you know, kind of ebb and flow. Do you see that?
Yeah, the only pattern we can see now when we're following their six-year pattern is those two classes, right? So we've seen the 2012, now the 2013. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting as we're able to collect another year to see if we can find a pattern. But, mm-hmm. yeah, interesting to see if some stick with it and persist or come in and out.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. So what I was not able to parse this out, and maybe. So is there also a tracking of the matriculation from, and I maybe missed that, community college to 4-year?
We
can
have
we
that.
See that?
It's not in here.
Okay.
However, Cuesta looks at the percentage of students from Cuesta that go to a 4-year.
And would we have access to that?
I
at
could
some
get,
point in the
I
future,
could get to it.
With all the other stuff that you do? Hopefully it's just a phone call. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, and I think I know the answers, but are there grants, scholarships, something for AVID students and SED students and maybe even kids that are somewhere between just barely above SED?
Mm-hmm.
And are we counseling heavily towards them?
Yeah, there's a couple answers to that. You bring up a great point. One is that there are extensive scholarships available, like through both of our high schools, that the college and career specialists, along with our counselors and teachers and administrators, walk them through those opportunities. But the other really neat thing, you bring up AVID. Part of the AVID program and curriculum is walking students through you know, all the grant opportunities, the financial aid opportunities, those kind of things that sometimes I think students assume they can't afford a 4-year, when actually through the AVID program they can see that a lot of those doors are open for them. It's a great point about that program.
Dr. Eisenteth Rogers?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. Oh,
sorry. Okay. Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. I guess I just have one sort of pathetic comment on my own family. I think that I received letters
for both of my kids, I thought they came from Morro Bay High School a while after they had graduated, wanting to know what they were doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's different than this data, but through career technical education, it's one of the ways that we track how students are doing, and we look to see, have they landed in a career field related to the courses
they
took?
Well, this would have been about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Was it like a postcard that came from Morro Bay High School?
I think so.
Yeah, that's exactly what that.
And both of my kids, nobody was at home, and I just kind of tossed that. I have a college graduate, and I have one that's about 4 units away from graduation. So I am in that purple group, and I wonder how many other people, didn't have their kids around or whatever, and it came to the house, and they just was like...
You bring up a good point, but I do think it's two separate data sets.
Okay.
So that data set is data that we
use.
Right. You were only
hurting us. It was only us I was hurting.
So this one, they won't actually tell us how they track it. If I had to do a wild guess, I would say a Social Security number, but it's not posted anywhere. When you ask, they won't. It's confidential information. So I'm guessing it's based on when you enroll and you show some sort of proof
of ID.
Well,
I see Mr. Mayfield, so I will be sure and correct that information.
You're still on the list from 10 years ago. Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else? Right. This is just a discussion item, so
thank you.
We have discussed. We will now move on to 8.04, Board Priority 1, Academic Achievement for All, Equity Update.
Yeah, I wanted to give you a brief equity update to catch you up with what we're doing this year and the progress that we're making. So this is one of the kind of guiding statements. Any system produces what it's designed to produce. So it's incumbent upon us to look very closely at our system and watch very closely what the students in our system are doing and tweak it and adjust it and improve it so that all students can be successful. Shifting culture, which is the work that we're doing, takes time, and it's about shifting beliefs, and it takes a lot of time and energy to make that happen. A lot of people are stepping forward and doing this work, and we're very proud of the people who are doing that. It's interconnected with instruction, assessment, and grading. As an educational organization, our main mission is to educate students and have them be successful, and so equity work has to include looking at those three things. One of our challenges is getting to all employees within the organization and touching all the different employee categories that we have. And we're building momentum with parents. In fact, next week on Thursday night at Bishop's Peak, we have our first community parent meeting on equity, and we're going to have several different presenters get up and share some of the work they're doing, including the one that you're going to hear tonight. We also are working with a local group called Raise Up Slow, and they're going to do what I think is a great presentation on civil discourse and civil dialogue, and talking across differences is the title of their presentation, and I think it's really powerful, and I like the conversations that we've had with the presenters so far. So if you get an opportunity, please do join us. We've invited all the community through Parent Square to come. We're bringing up the round tables from J2 so we can have kind of a different format to get folks in a room looking at one another and talking and engaging. So we're hoping that that'll be a great first foray into our equity activities. These are the equity activities which I've been through before in a previous update, and so I won't go through them all in detail, but I will bring you to the bystander-upstander training, which we're going to talk about right now. And will we start off with the video, or do you guys want to come up first? Okay, so I'd like to introduce two folks who we're working with on Stand Up Act Out, which is an anti-bullying program done through drama with young kids. We're going to try and get to all of our kindergarten through third grade teachers between this year and next year. We started with second grade already, and we're working with first grade now. One of the challenges, of course, is where do teachers find the time to do this work within the classroom? There's so many great things happening, but one of the things I particularly love about this program is the support that we've received from Carrie Langner, a professor at Cal Poly, and Sarah Reinen, who's a drama teacher through Pajama Drama. And they've done an excellent job working with our teachers, being very accommodating, where teachers said, you know, I don't know exactly what this looks like. They've gone out to the school site, even done a demo lesson for the teacher to get them started, and they'll explain a little bit about their program, Stand Up and Act Out, teaching young kids to be upstanders instead of bystanders.
Okay.
Hi, very nice to see all of you tonight. Just to give a little bit of background, I'm a professor of psychology and child development, and working with Sarah, who is an expert in early childhood drama, we wanted to acquaint you with this program that we've developed in collaboration with the district. So the first piece I was going to mention is why an upstander. That may seem obvious, but I was going to just give you a little bit of research that's the background here. So the first piece, which you may be aware of, is that there's a pressing need for intervention in this area. Nationally, one out of three children are bullied, and most of that bullying is on the basis of identity. So you could think of things such as skin color, religion, language, gender expression, those sorts of areas. And what we see from the research literature is that rather than changing kids' attitudes about what they think about bullying, the most important intervention point is that we change what kids think is normal or typical. So we change those social norms in the school. So it's much more effective over the long run if I believe at Pacheco Elementary School, I can't get away with saying something like this. Someone's going to call me out for doing that. Eventually, we hope, right, that those respectful attitudes will follow. But in terms of shifting that behavior, it's really the norms that are important. This won't surprise anyone who is a teacher or a parent, but peer intervention is much more effective than the adults informing children how they should be behaving. So this program is really designed to put that power in the children's hands, that they create what is that normative, inclusive school culture. So in terms of the acting portion, what's really important here is that role play really gives children a chance to practice. And in terms of them feeling that efficacy, that they can intervene and they can be effective, that repetition, that practice is very important. Also helping to build those socio-emotional skills we know are so important to lay the foundation for academic success. And one last piece I'll mention is that we know that conversations around difference can be very challenging for adults. And so what we want to do in this program is really normalize conversations around difference. We don't want to unintentionally tell children that there's something shameful about these identity differences. So this really gives tools to teachers to really facilitate those conversations. And children are very interested in asking questions about difference. So we want to capitalize on that and do it in a way where they learn how to do that respectfully. I think Sarah's going to talk a little bit about what it looks like in the classroom.
We thought it might be nice to paint a little picture for you of what these kids are actually doing in their classrooms. And it's two parts. The first part is a celebration of difference, and we do that through games. So there's, for example, one game where they're all sitting in a circle and someone in the middle says, "This is me," and you can see that I'm wearing blue, and everyone that has wearing blue shifts spots in the circle. But it gets more interesting as they say, "This is me," and you can't see that I am really good at soccer, or you can't see that I have two homes. And so then the kids that are getting up to cross, you're getting to know the children in your classroom in a way that maybe you wouldn't have had a chance to do otherwise. And it's physical and fun. So it's subtly reinforcing that differences are great. And then the other aspect, as Carrie mentioned, is the role play. And we do that by introducing them to a student, an imaginary student who's struggling with something, through a letter. So they write into Stand Up School. For example, "Dear Stand Up students, my name's Sam, and last week at school, Mrs. Jones asked us what we wanted to be when we grew up, and everyone put their hands up. When it was my turn, I said I was going to learn how to be an astronaut, and I was going to be the next American to walk on the moon. Robbie turned around in his chair and said, "Brown kids don't go into space. Brown kids play basketball." I don't think the teacher heard, but everyone at my table did. At recess, Robbie pretended to be an astronaut and played rockets with his friends. I watched him feeling sad and frustrated because I know what he said about brown kids just isn't true. When I think about all the people with skin like mine who have already been to space, a burst of happy fills me up and makes me stand tall. I wish more kids knew that lots of people have been to space. I wish someone would tell Robbie, but I don't know if anyone ever will. From Sam. And then that leads into a discussion. You know, they really relate to Sam or want to talk about it. And then they get up and practice because Sam didn't have anyone stand up for him. But at our school, we would. And what would that look like? And I feel nervous about that, so I'm going to practice and practice and practice. And I'd love to show you. These are, you can't really see them well, but it's examples of intervention phrases that you might use, whether to support someone who's being teased. Are you okay? Or do you want to play? Or I think it's great that we're all different. Or it's confronting someone who has forgotten the norm at our school and made a mistake. And there are some examples. At our school, we're kind to each other. And then if we can move on to the video, I'll show you what the kids look like when they are playing a game that practices using one of those phrases. And this is a training video, too, for the teachers. This is what we showed the first grade teachers in their training. So,
someone needs an upstander up, that there is no doubt. Students, stand up. Students, act out.
Are you okay?
Yeah,
that was
really good.
Maybe I'll let Carrie tell you about how the teachers are responding.
Yeah, so we've been chatting with teachers at the trainings and the follow-up webinars and also coming into classrooms to help and just staying in touch. And I also have a survey that roughly half the teachers have filled out so far so that I could get a little bit more quantitative kinds of data. So two kind of really big points that I see so far. Number one, their students absolutely love doing these lessons. They love, I think, the interactive aspect of it, and they really, really enjoy being dramatic, as you could probably see in the video. The other piece that I think is really encouraging is that teachers are reporting that their students are using these tools in the classroom as well as on the playground. I will mention that when I did one of the earlier versions of this at Pacheco, my oldest child was in the class that we used as a kind of guinea pig class. And several weeks later, one of the students ran up to me and told me that she had stood up for my child. And you can imagine, right, how good that feels for that child to hear someone else standing up for them.
Rick had mentioned, right, that we have grades 1 and 2 that are second grade's almost completely finished. First grade is in progress, and kinder and third will join them in the fall. And I think a really important piece of that is building that school culture so that when you do make that move to be an upstander on the playground, that's a shared language and it's understood and it just becomes all the more powerful. Cal Poly undergraduates are working with me as research assistants. They've had a really wonderful time surveying second graders, very different than surveying college students. Much, much cuter. They're a little harder to pin down, so you have to ask a smaller number of questions. But we're hoping to be able to show the time one to time two data that second graders did, in fact, see a shift in the norms of respect at their sites, their schools, and that they feel some increased confidence based on having been in the program. The last thing I just wanted to mention about grades K and 3 joining is that in addition to that whole school culture, we've really designed the program to scaffold the children so that eventually what we'll have is the kinder students will move on to first grade having gained some initial skills, and they just continue to build upon those. So by the time they get to second and third grade, they're actually doing more advanced work in terms of the dramatic pieces and really getting to try out additional phrases and some of their own intervention phrases, since Sarah and I, you know, we're pretty cool, but we don't always know the latest way of saying things. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Any questions from the board?
Questions for them in particular?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Thanks very much.
Yeah, they've done excellent work. They were in Mrs. Green's class at C.L. Smith today filming a video. She's so enthusiastic about it.
Oh, great.
So, great. Thank you. Another thing, the last thing I want to share with you that we're engaged in right now is the equity team decided last year at the end of the year to look into two things. Number one, how would we measure equity? And then number two, looking at policies. And not just board policies, but kind of like practices, holiday practices, things like that. And we're going to get into that in the second half of the year. But currently, we're engaged in looking at an equity report card. We contacted the Association of California School Administrators, ACSA, and other organizations to get some tips on who's doing really good work in terms of measuring equity, because it's a difficult thing. You know, we have things like the dashboard. We have, you know, SBAC scores and other data points that we collect and you know, like some of the ones that Mrs. McGrath shared earlier. But could we compile these into some sort of an equity report card? So we shared it with principals and got some of their feedback. We shared it with the equity team at the last meeting, and this is just a draft copy that we have up here now. And we will next time come up with a final draft towards the end of the year to present. But I just wanted to let you know that that's ongoing work, developing an equity report card for our district. And then, you know, this is same as before. A shifting culture takes time, and there's a lot of great and different activities, and we just wanted to share these two with you tonight.
Thank you. Any questions, comments by the board? Ms. Frank?
Thanks, Mr. Rayfield. I was, you know, wondering when I was looking at the report card, and you explained to me, thank you, that it's a work in progress.
Correct.
And I had a thought after talking with you. I was thinking, are we looking at the report card focus on, you know, is it site equity or metrics of equity in our district systems?
I would say it's metrics, the second one, metrics of equity in the district system.
Okay. And then as we were, you know, I was looking at it, you know, the card a little bit more deeply, and I was wondering, it seems, and you'll have to clarify, that it's more weighted for secondary, mm-hmm. and so should be, you know, as you said, work in progress, mm-hmm. take a deeper dive into what those metrics look like in elementary to develop that TK through K metrics plan.
Great point, and some of the groups pointed that out immediately, especially the secondary principals.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, please.
Mr. Buck, I cannot see your light at all. Okay, there.
I'll try.
Now I can, but it's head on at me.
Got it. Okay, that's my apologies. So, had the honor of being in the room with the when this was introduced, and it sparked so much discussion and so much excitement and just a ton of instantly what I thought were great ideas. However, it dawned on me tonight, and in looking at your next steps, that we may have forgotten about the what we used to call textbook adoptions and subject adoptions. So I don't want to lose that thought. So I'll just throw that out.
As
maybe
part of the report card in particular?
We have, you know, somehow included, because so much of it is Eurocentric.
Correct.
And maybe the astronaut needs to...
Right, looking at that process. We do use toolkits from California Department of Education in doing any adoption and walk groups through what that process looks like. But that's a great point, something we could look at.
And thanks so much, Rick, for what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay, anyone else?
All right. Thank
you. Again, this is discussion only this evening. Thank you, Rick. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're on to 8.05. Board Priority 3, Culture of Care and School Safety.
Yeah, so this is the second update for the board in our year-long kind of focus on safety. One of the board priorities was really to look at our practices, our policies, our school sites, and gather information. We have Resolute and Associates that have tied in with the district, helped us in terms of this focus, and they have recently completed their site surveys. So they've been around to every single site, had that kind of, you know, with safety view from perimeter fencing to disabled access onto campus to fire alarms. And so they actually went around with Rick Stimson to every site, analyzed each site. And so we have shared a couple of those reports today, which we'll take a quick look at. But I also wanted to kind of share, we have a working group of the kind of some key leaders that is every other month. And then in between that, we have all of our management. So every single one of our principals, every single one of our classified managers, the cabinet, we get together and we focus on, kind of again, these safety goals, plans, what we're doing as a school district. So, again, I just want to touch base on these quickly tonight. In April, Resolute will be coming to one of our study sessions and really getting into depth with showing you the plans and all of the site facility assessments, those types of things as we move forward. So just to kind of quickly tie into that. So, Mandy, if you'll click on the first, review kind of the work done by the safety teams. So, again, this all started from the Safe and Sound Schools. So the two of the parents from Sandy Hook put together this, you know, kind of foundation for us. Go to the next tab. And that kind of developed the structure for us. We quickly kind of realized that three of the pillars kind of went together. The other three pillars went together and formed two teams. And with that, did the main page come with it or no? So the deliverables part not tied to it? Okay, that's what I'm looking for. So if you, it kind of gives our goals. Again, this is what we've been working on as those management teams. So looking at each one of these, what are our focus areas? What are the things we want to come up with? What are the different ideas that kind of face us? And we live in an interesting time right now, especially in the state of California with new mandates that come up. I mean, we just had a Lozano Smith that we have to have a new suicide policy for kindergarten through 12th grade, and we have to have posters in our bathrooms about sexual harassment. And I mean, there's all of these things that are hitting. So this has been a good process for that, in that it's helping us to review all of those things, kind of put things in place. And so I wanted to share this with you. I'm not going to go through it tonight, but just so that you could see all the work that's been going into, you know, with each of the groups and what we're looking at and the types of things that we're coming up with. So if you go to the website next, Mandy, if you go back. So what's coming out of this is that we're going to take these core themes
and really enhance our safety website or our safety page on the website. So basically taking these ideas that we're coming up with, things that we should have, policies, procedures, resources for parents, for students, for staff, and then kind of putting those in a place that are easily accessible for those groups. And so we're going to be taking those kind of core ideas, which I've kind of outlined for you on the website, and really kind of have ties into those. So what we found is that we have these things, but they're not kept up. They're not, you know, each year looked at, analyzed, you know, are there new resources, things we should take off. So I think by having this website, by us looking at it on an annual basis, we'll be able to update it, make sure those resources are there. Little things like our family resource centers are on Facebook. Well, if you don't have Facebook, how do you connect with them? How do you do that? So we have information at the sites, right, that they can go to or find out, or phone numbers, but we just need to have a better kind of accessible space for people to look these things up. And a lot of the information is actually on our current website. It's just hard to find. So is there a way for us to kind of make it an easy one-stop, you know, place for people to go? So the next task is really for me to kind of break those out. You'll see there's a variety of things, right? So the first one, the first section, is really those mental behavioral health resources and everything that goes into that. Then we actually have health and wellness. So we have our wellness committee. We have, you know, they meet, they have minutes, they have groups. All of the things that Aaron's doing with food service. We're constantly getting questions about, you know, is there nutrition in schools and what are we doing? So to have a place to kind of display that, to highlight it, I think is important. And then lastly, that culture, climate, community. So, you know, Dr. Prater's focus, Common Ground, students in it. You know, we have these great things that we're doing, but where do we show the public those results, or what kids are doing, the student survey results, our healthy kids, you know, surveys, those types of things. So just have a link, a place for people to go, I think will be valuable as we kind of move forward and build this safety website. And we'll see where it goes and how it expands. But I wanted to kind of just let you kind of just see how this is, you know, we have this idea of safety and where we're kind of diving into the actual deliverables behind that. So the last two things are just a quick look at our facility surveys I wanted to show you. So I gave you two examples, one C.L. Smith and one is Pacheco. So they actually asked Rob and Garrett, hey, give me a couple of facilities. They said, hey, let me give you the two that are kind of opposing, right? So we have opposite. So C.L. Smith, of course, new perimeter fencing, modernized, pretty much locked down, you know, at the beginning of the day. One entrance into the campus. You have to go into the office to get on. So there's all of those aspects of things that, you know, really if you talk to the FBI, if you talk to law enforcement, these are kind of the things that they would want you to have on your campuses. At Pacheco, which we already know, right, is one of our most open schools. So, in you know, small fencing around it, various openings. You don't really know where the front of the campus is. Having visitor entrance, so when people come in, do they badge? You know, there's a lot of things that they were able to highlight and point out on those facility assessments that you can see. And so they've done that for all of the school sites. And again, these include not only the perimeter fencing ideas, but we have aging fire alarm systems. So, you know, Los Osos Middle School this summer, new fire alarm project for there. So there's a lot of things that have come up besides maybe just that, you know, kind of those basic entrance points or fencing ideas. And so needless to say, Rob and Garrett are super thorough. I mean, beyond thorough when they put things together. So they've done this for every single one of our school sites. I would also tell the board that we were fortunate enough to receive the hazard mitigation grant through the state of California, which is about $50,000 in a grant that I look forward to working with. And so Rob in particular was critical in helping us write that grant, put it together. And so that's kind of to put together, should there be a major hazard that we have in our school district, that plan of how we would deal with it in the future. So I'll be back in April, study session, to really, you know, kind of highlight this as well, but really focus on those kind of facilities and share this information with the board.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you very much. Just two quick questions, and I'm sorry I was distracted, just so maybe it came up, but mm-hmm. In the discussions that you're having, are parents, PTA, community involved? Have we tapped those resources
yet? Well, law enforcement, definitely. So law enforcement, fire, you know, kind of those groups. Not necessarily parent groups yet in terms of kind of where we're, you know, what we've done thus far. Something we definitely can do. I do share this with, like, Dr. Prater's PTA committee, so we'll be giving those informations. But
there may be some insights just because their kids come home. And the other thing is I know that the PTA and some other national parent groups are heavily focused on this and doing some similar research. So just wondering. And then you answered, you got it, because I was going to ask about first responders.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there is going to be some uncomfortable things as we move through. So in terms of just safety, everyone wearing their badge on campus during the school day, having everyone sign in at the office and check out. I mean, there are things that we're going to be talking to the board about, that, you know, drop off time and pick up time and what that looks like and what we should do. So I'll be sharing a lot of that with the board in April as we move forward and we start to implement this over, this is going to take a few years to implement all the things that we're looking at, talking about. But it's good stuff, and it's things that we really should focus on. And it's things that our parents, students, and staff, they're asking for. They want to feel safe. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have 8.06, proposed revisions to board policy 5121.
Thank you. So tonight I have before you two board policy and one board bylaw. So the first one, we have board policy 5121, which is grades, evaluation of student achievement. And you will notice that this has gone through our process of being seen by a director, going through the subcommittee, gathering information and recommendations there, with only a slight change on this one to be about dual enrollment courses. So tonight, this is just a first reading, and with your approval, it would come back for a second reading.
Any questions, comments by the board? Seeing none, we will bring this one back at our next meeting for adoption. Next is 8.07, proposed revisions to board policy 5127, graduation ceremonies and activities. Again, a first reading.
Thank you. A first reading, and again, this has gone through our process. You will see on the second page of honors and awards that the addition there that has also been gone through by our subcommittee is that students shall be permitted to wear tribal regalia and recognized objects of religious or cultural significance, etc. Again, a first reading, so with your approval, I would suggest this coming back for a second reading.
Mr. Buckman?
Unfortunately, I read this again. And just a question, and maybe it's answered, but do we need to worry about, and this is pretty broad now, freedom of speech, and if I want to put a peace sign on the top of my graduation cap? Mm-hmm.
We do have pretty detailed AR about the lack of decoration so that it doesn't take away from the groups, the group as a whole being honored.
So for me, the question now becomes, isn't it somehow an infringement on First Amendment rights? So I get that we can sort of ask them not to or tell them not to, but are we somehow... Is there something new, nothing that we know of?
Nothing that I know of that would keep us from saying that you can't, decorate a cap, that kind of thing, that's not a free right of speech.
During that ceremony, probably.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else? All right. Then the last one is proposed revisions to a board bylaw regarding agenda and meeting materials.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of discussion went into this. You can see from the red changes that there is a lot of gamut suggestions. And again, this was reviewed thoroughly by Ms. Sheffer and Mr. Buckman in our board subcommittee with additions, deletions, and some adjustments there before you. So again, this is a first reading. I would suggest it come back for a second reading.
Mr. Buckman?
Yep. Sorry I read this again. That's always a mistake. In the first paragraph where it says governing board meeting agenda shall reflect the district's vision goals and the district's focus on student learning, the board has recently been and asked staff, and staff has been working with a set of priorities, and I'm wondering whether we should use that term as well up here. So it gives us the district's priorities, vision, and goals. So I just throw that out as a possibility.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from. You might say that your goals likely align with your priorities, up to your discretion, but I would say goals might encompass that.
Okay. Let me see. In paragraph 5, each agenda for a regular meeting shall list the address designated by the superintendent or designee for public inspection of documents. I'm wondering if it's okay, because I don't know if this is in law, that it needs to say address, or whether we could include a website or other, just to cover us in the future, other location. I don't know when it's going to, you know, in the cloud, on the back of a student's cap and gown. Sorry. So I don't know whether legally we have to be cautious about adding website. But And then in paragraph 9, the board president, so at the end of that, I'm wondering if there's some interest, or whether this is an AR, that when a determination is made, should there be some place in the agenda that says correspondence was sent to someone, or we received correspondence that said we'd really like to look into why the district can't do more to launch people into space, and the response then would go back and say, no, it's not really germane, or whatever the reason is. And then within that also say, if there's one about board policy that already exists, include in some kind of the response that says, you know, love to hear from you, but there's already a board policy that addresses this, and then direct, and I'm assuming we would direct them to that location, but since it came, it might be interesting, and I'm just throwing it out, that we have that reflected somewhere, that we received a request, that it was denied, and this is why. And then down in the legal references, the Attorney General publications, the Brown Act open meetings for legislative bodies revised 2003, again, with a cursory research, the board, there is one now, that the Brown Act School Boards and Open Meeting Laws revised 2014. Minor, but just think we should cover ourselves.
So that one appears as well above there, the Brown Act School Boards and Open Meeting Laws revised 2014. So
right.
Maybe the 2003 one should just be eliminated something.
That'd be great. Anyway, those are some thoughts I had. I'm only one board member.
Yeah, I would suggest then that maybe we take this back to the subcommittee, because frankly I was a little lost with a couple of the suggestions, and maybe we should take it back to the committee first, because
if I can maybe clarify, so on one on the front it would be adding possibly website or other forms of shall list the address.
So I don't even know
website.
Where we what.
We sure can take it to the subcommittee. Of course, I would just tell you, though, that we have quite the backlog, right?
I
so I just am hesitant to,
I mean,
you know,
I
to
guess
bring
I'm
it back again.
Because we had, you know, there are a couple of the suggestions that as the subcommittee member, I most likely would not agree with.
Right.
So
especially about the correspondence and all that.
I think it should go back to the committee. I'm sorry there's a backlog. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it sounds like we didn't do our job on this one thoroughly.
I couldn't follow where you were with some of the suggested changes. I kind of got lost so that we could get it in a more in a revised form.
With suggested language, it sounds like it would be helpful.
And honoring Ellen's concerns, again, I'm just one board member, and I totally appreciate it. I don't think any of
Concern is if next meeting we come back for a second reading and you're making these suggestions that we need to vote on, I would be just as kind of lost as I am now. That it would make it difficult to.
So these were thoughts that I have. I'm wondering whether shall list the address, whether that address just covers websites, so that's taken care of. The other one is convoluted and maybe should be held for another meeting, another go round.
How about we discuss it Thursday at our next subcommittee meeting?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Is that yeah?
Okay, that's fine.
Thanks. And I won't read them a second time.
Okay, so I think where we stand, although this is not any kind of vote, but just for clarity of direction for Ms. McGrath, is 8.06 and 8.07 are ready to return for a second reading, and 8.08 goes kind of back to the drawing board.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? Okay. All right. Moving on to the action consent portion of the meeting, please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 9.01, acceptance of donations. 9.02, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.03, approval of warrants and payroll. Nine point oh four, approval of furniture and equipment request. 9.05, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. 9.06, disposal of surplus. 9.07, approval of field study trip requests, Morro Bay High School volleyball team to Las Vegas. 9.08, approval of school site safety plans. 9.09, approved quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams settlement. 9.10, approved quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams settlement. 9.11, proposed revisions to board policy 4151/4251/4351, employee compensation, it's a second reading. 9.12, proposed revisions to board policy 5117, inter-district attendance, that's a second reading. So I would like a motion, please, on all but 9.03. If we do that.
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Mr. Buckman, 9.03.
Just a clarification for anybody that takes the time to read all this, but also a clarification for myself. As we open the item approval of warrants and payrolls, there's some summary statements at the top. The second one is payroll warrant approval. I noted that, and I'm sure there's a simple explanation like the holidays, that the number of employees January 10th was 539, and the number of employees January 31st was 952. And that was a big difference, and I know there's a simple answer, but I just would love to understand this better.
Yeah, most employees get paid one time a month, which would be the end of the month, and so those others would probably just be people that sometimes are substitutes, mid-month payroll, or different.
Thanks. I knew it was going to be simple.
So would you like to make a motion, Mr.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'd like to make a motion to approve 9.03.
I'll second that. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Next is 10.02, advance agenda. Seeing no one, we will move on to reports by board members. Anyone have anything to report? Ms. Frame, then Mr. Buckman.
I just wanted to thank two schools for welcoming me at the Equity Walk, Loams Middle School and Laguna. And I had the opportunity, along with Dr. Isadoth Rogers, to sit in on a four-year plan. And it was really interesting. And it was, you know, I was mostly interested in hearing from the student and, you know, from their perspective. And, you know, the engagement and the interaction between Mr. Donnelly and the students. So I'd be curious to, you know, as Ms. Donnelly said, it's a, you know, work in progress and, you know, a bit of refinement. And also to hear, you know, what parents have to say about it. And then when I went over to Laguna, you know, Mr. Calandro was really kind of, you know, he's such a calm guy, kind of very excited about, you know, all the staff training he's doing and moving the ball with equity. And so it was just really nice to be welcome and to be an on-site. Didn't actually walk around this time, but, you know, it was just an opportunity to see something different. So thank you.
All right, Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, not so much as a report as a just applause again. I just want to thank administration for continuing to link agenda items to the board priorities. Too often strategic plans and goals and visions and priorities are adopted and then they sit on a shelf, and this, I think, clearly sends a message that the board is working towards, as a group, working towards what they said they were going to work towards. So thank you.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers.
Yes, I just want to also ditto what we were discussing earlier about the eighth grade approach to having a youngster at an eighth grade sit down with an administrator and show that one-on-one caring and support at both Los Osos and Laguna. And it really made me appreciate how we're reaching out through the student to the parents who may not have the knowledge that these administrators have and are able to sit down and go through every class and talk about what they hope, what their hopes and dreams are, and will they go on to college. And then these may be students that maybe didn't even consider college before. So it was a very, it was really touching, and it was a very sweet board walk. So I want to thank everybody for that.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We have a study session on the 13th and then a next regular board meeting on February 18th. See y'all then.
So we're not going to.